step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show. My name is Spencer Walsh. The moment you are waiting for is finally here. If you're a Republican, you've been holding on. You've been dreaming of this day ever since you still haven't come to the acceptance that Joe Biden won the 2020 election. But if you have had, you've most likely been waiting for this day, even after that tough midterm election, for quite a long time. It's the moment that for the past 2 years, with every insult from the liberal Biden administration, you know, people have just been waiting for and building for. It looked a little bit in doubt after a strong, you know, astroturfed Club for Growth week of people pushing Ron DeSantis as the 2024 GOP nominee by default, and that, you know, our big wet boy had completely fallen off the face of the earth and, you know, was just going to go quietly into the night. But no, the man who probably broke the most people's brains in literally American political history, Donald J. Trump, after almost causing a constitutional crisis of democracy, will now, in just 5 minutes, take the stage to announce his third run, his third bite at the apple. Once, obviously, was incredibly successful. Second was, you know, 2020. We all know how that went. And third, well, we'll see, won't we? In just 5 minutes, we'll break it all down. We'll tell you what you need to know about the fractions inside the GOP. This is our live coverage of episode 634, the announcement. Donald Trump runs for president in 2024. We will not obviously just be giving you this kind of empty camera staring at the podium vibe of 2016, because that is going to be a very interesting thing. Like, we are in a legit Trump is out of office campaign season again. It's going to be very, very interesting. You know, as we're about to see that he's officially filed the paperwork, the FEC and everything. Like, it is officially, you know, for real happening. But the question is, what is he going to do? What tact is he going to take on this? I think it's going to be very, very interesting to watch. And will he, you know, make some kind of real move? The question is, will the way he has any chance at winning in the general, I think, is if he can get people to move back, you know, the 2020, the 2020 election. I think when it comes to get people to kind of process and move past, and if he can himself move past the 2020 election, I think, you know, we saw a big effort in the last few days. We didn't really cover this on Newsflash just because there just was not a lot of time, but we saw a big effort in the last few days to really move past everything Donald Trump. We saw these Club for Growth polls, all these polls, you know, people that have been really just beefing with Donald Trump a long time, these very key establishment Republican organizations that have really gone after Trump multiple times and kind of definitely disagreed with him quite frequently during this campaign season, were big enemies of him in 2016, and obviously, you know, came around throughout the administration. Like, Club for Growth, they're literally releasing fake polls that are pretty much, you know, showing how, you know, oh, Trump is completely out of it. I think DeSantis, you know, it'll be very, very interesting to see how he actually holds up against, you know, any real pressure. But it is quite an interesting situation, you know, without a doubt. It's looking, you know, a lot like 2016 in that a lot of the Republican Party is not thrilled with him again. You know, they put up with him, they supported him because the base loved him and they know where the bread is buttered. But now, you know, it's election season again. Things are kind of up for grabs, and boy, it is expected to get contentious. A growing number of Republicans are, you know, they're seeing him as a political liability, just as they saw him. You know, keep in mind, they all said this stuff. The same people, it's really just incredible. You know, how fickle do they think we are? That is just so incredible. We got people like Lindsey Graham. Remember him? Remember him? Republican of South Carolina told reporters on Capitol Hill that he did not think Trump should make the announcement soon, saying, I think we just need to get 22 over with before we can talk about 24. I think he has a decent chance of coming back, maybe a good chance depending on how the country unfolds in the next year. I prefer to get Georgia behind us before we make those decisions. You know, sorry, Lindsey. This man gave your phone number out to everyone back in 2016. I still remember. I still remember. Republicans are there on the cusp of claiming control of the House of Representatives for the 118th Congress when it convenes next year. And after notching victories late Monday night in a handful of congressional races in Arizona, New York, and California, the party is within one seat of taking the U.S.
He appointed.
House.
He could absolutely talk about that.
I'm going to do a little bit of there was a little bit of Maggie there in the background, but yeah, we're going to wait on Trump in, you know, just a little bit. We'll give you the full Trump readout. Of course, we'll get to the fact that, you know, World War III might have started over in Poland as well. But after these kind of like rosy predictions for a Republican wave, the party's majority in the House, though, is going to be a lot smaller than its leaders anticipated. You know, McCarthy, at the beginning of this 2022 calendar year, was thinking 60-plus seats would be in his control. He's lucky to get 10. You know, Congress will be divided next year after Democrats held control of the Senate, and attention is now focused in a few districts in California and Colorado where the Republican candidate is leading in the vote count. A race call in any of these districts on Tuesday would certainly give the Republicans the 218 seats they need to retake the House majority. So Kevin McCarthy, he also resoundingly won the nomination for Speaker, which is kind of interesting, at a closed-door vote at the Capitol, 188-31. But the defectors who voted for Representative Angie Biggs, a protest candidate put up by the Freedom Caucus, showed that his quest to win over the hard right flank of the party was far from over. So he will need to get 218 votes to win the whole House speakership. And this is pretty much essentially, you know, a practice vote, you know, because the real chaos can be caused. The real concessions can be made. The real, you know, gears could be grinded. In January, when push comes to shove, and it is going to be much, much more, you know, the actual nomination for Speaker comes, so the Democrats can vote too, and if there's not a unified Republican caucus, and you want to get a unified Republican caucus, and especially, you know, Democrats will be there just waiting to put some, you know, moderate candidate up to poach off a few people on the Republican Party. And, you know, some of these Democrats, these newly elected New York Republicans, I think like Mike Lawler in the New York 17th is like, yeah, I'll support a moderate. You know, I don't know about Ken McCarthy, but I may be getting, I think some of the newly elected Republicans are proven to be much more, you know, shying away from McCarthy. So if they can't get their act together, if McCarthy can't make a real case between now and January when the vote comes and the Congress is convened, you know, there's going to be a real problem. So for the Republicans, and it's just going to be, you know, on every single issue, there will be no more than I think 5-6 seat majority in the House for Republicans. It's going to be just as tight, if not tighter, for them than it was for, as it was for the Democrats these past 2 years, where they had just a razor thin majority in the House. Senator Rick Scott of Florida, who oversaw the Senate campaign arm, said he would challenge Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky for minority leader. McConnell is widely respected to retain support from the majority of his conference, particularly since some Republicans are frustrated with how, you know, Scott, widely seen as kind of blowing the Senate campaign. And, you know, they really thinking, you know, hey, you should be, maybe if you made us the majority, you know, you could be the majority leader, Rick Scott, is what a lot of Republicans are saying at the moment. I think that's justifiably so. But again, you look at the big problem, it comes down to Rick Scott didn't pick these candidates. Rick Scott is not the one who's leading this whole shebang. It is Donald Trump. He is the one who's making these calls and elevating these candidates to these places. And that is what is causing a lot of this, you know, real, I think, friction. And it, like right now, the only thing the Republicans seem to be able to, you know, the two questions are, did we not do Stop the Steal enough in the Republican Party in the campaigns, or do we not do culture war issues enough in the campaign? Like, there's no consideration of, you know, can we actually talk something that relates to the American people here? It's just really, you know, how can we just blame Biden for inflation and make it look like we don't care at all, which I think was a big thing that people really started to realize. And people are, I think, coming to the realization, coming to understanding that, hey, I think Biden got hit for the gas prices, but he did get a big boost when people started to realize. And I think the messaging did, I think, really clearly come home way, way more than what the Democrats realized in the 2022 midterms was that, hey, maybe this Putin price hike stuff, or just the idea that President Biden, you know, what the Democrats pretty much wanted you to believe is President Biden was not a powerful enough political figure to control the economy in a way that would effectively reduce inflation. I think that was like kind of the really kind of implicit case that they were making. And they made that case. You know, they did definitely make that case. So, you know, it is very, very very, very interesting to see what exactly will be, you know, the vibe here. How are they going to make that case?
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yes, and we will continue to watch. And we are not, we are not expect. Oh, there he is. All right, let's go to him. Trump. He's taking the stage.
And they didn't understand the strategy there, and that's. It's kind of this point
this
of people getting
little
fed
bit of
up
CNN
with it.
Background.
Whether or not it's a breaking point, who knows?
We will
a lot of
see
Republicans in the
what
Senate right
he
now
says
are focusing
here
their IR on.
Very, very, very interesting situation. What tact will he take? We saw how it was, I believe it was, six years ago now? Now he was taking the stage in Mar-a-Lago to announce his third run for president. The man himself, Donald J. Trump, now moments away, seconds away even, from speaking at his place of residence here, as he he's doing his typical Trump faces right now in the crowd as we get ready for it. But yeah, let's go to him.
USA, 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 USA.
Well, thank you very much, and on behalf of Melania, myself, and our entire family, I want to thank you all for being here tonight. It's a very special occasion at a very special place. You and all of those watching are the heart and soul of this incredible movement and the greatest country in the history of the world. It's very simple. There has never been anything like it. This great movement of ours, never been anything like it, and perhaps there will never be anything like it again. There's never been anything to compete with what we have all done. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now. Yes! 2 years ago, when I left office, the United States stood ready for its golden age. Our nation was at the pinnacle of power, prosperity, and prestige. Towering above all rivals, vanquishing all enemies, and striding into the future, confident and so strong. In 4 short years, everybody was doing great. Men, women, African Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, everybody was thriving like never before. There was never a time like this. We turn the page on decades of globalist sellouts and one-sided trade deals, lifted millions out of poverty, and together we built the greatest economy in the history of the world. When the virus hit our shores, I took decisive action and saved lives and the U.S. economy. And by October of the same year, America was roaring back with the number one fastest economic recovery ever recorded. How about that? All of the incoming administration and all
looks
they had
we're
to
in
do
for kind of a typical
was just
boring speech
sit back
at the moment,
and watch.
A typical Trump
inflation was non-existent. Our southern border was by far
Trump
the strongest
phrases,
ever.
Yes,
and because the border was so tight, drugs were coming into our country at the lowest level in many, many years.
Very
importantly, after
rhetoric,
decades
though,
of rising energy costs, the United States had finally attained the impossible dream of American energy independence, which soon would have turned into energy dominance. For the first time in memory, China was reeling and back on its heels. You've never seen that before, because the United States was outdoing them on every single front, and China was paying billions and billions of dollars in taxes and tariffs. The farmers know that because they got $28 billion of it. No president had ever sought or received $1 for our country from China until I came along, and we were getting hundreds of billions of dollars. Many people think that because of this, China played a very active role in the 2020 election. Just saying. Sure, that didn't happen.
He can't help himself.
Instead of jobs and factories leaving America for China, they were for the first time ever leaving China for America.
But I mean, you know, if he talks about that kind of message, he talks about
businesses were pouring back because of our historic tax.
Even if that is a like slightly untrue thing, you know, it's not like he's turning the tide of American manufacturing. A lot of like what he did was frankly by accident, but that was probably some of his most successful policy. You know, if there's any area he wants to hit, it's that, and it's not. You know, look, remember what we did on January 6th.
States, and quite honestly, they respected me. I knew them well. I knew them well. The vicious ISIS caliphate, which no president was able to conquer, was decimated by me and our great warriors in less than 3 weeks, and al-Baghdadi, its founder, was hunted down and killed. North Korea had not launched a single long-range missile since my summit with Chairman Kim Jong-un nearly 3 years before. We developed a relationship, and that's a good thing, not a bad thing. It's a good thing, very good thing, actually, because look at what's happening today. My opponents made me out to be a warmonger and just a terrible person who would immediately go into war. They said during the 2016 campaign that if he becomes president, there will never be a war within weeks, and we will have wars like you've never seen before. It will happen immediately, and yet I've gone decades without a war, the first president to do it for that long a period.
That doesn't just make no sense.
The world was at peace, but America was prospering, and our country was on track for an amazing future because I made big promises to the American people, and unlike other presidents, I kept my promises. I kept them.
And again, here's another area where Biden should be able to really, I think, put some pressure on him if he was worth his salt, which is saying, hey, I pulled out of Afghanistan. You were afraid to pull out of Afghanistan. You just would do whatever the generals would tell you to do, and he'd be absolutely right on that. He would be absolutely right on it. So I think that is an incredibly important thing to put into effect.
Under
like he talked a big talk.
We
you know, you could argue he set the stage. It was, you know, a pretty bullshit thing to say. But Joe Biden pulled out of Afghanistan. Democrats pulled out of it. They ended that war. And I think that's something that they should be more proud of.
We are a failing nation. For millions of Americans, the past 2 years under Joe Biden have been a time of pain, hardship, anxiety, and despair. As we speak, inflation is the highest in over 50 years. Gas prices have reached the highest levels in history and expect them to go much higher now that the strategic national reserves, which I filled up, have been virtually drained in order to keep gasoline prices lower just prior to the election. Joe Biden has intentionally surrendered our energy independence. There is no longer even a thought of dominance, and we are now begging for energy help from foreign nations, many of whom find us detestable. Our southern border has been erased, and our country is being invaded by millions and millions of unknown people, many of whom are entering for a very bad and sinister reason. And you know what that reason is. We will be paying a big price for this invasion into our country for years to come. Hundreds of thousands of pounds of deadly drugs, including very lethal fentanyl, are flooding across the now open and totally porous southern border. The blood-soaked streets of our once great cities are cesspools of violent crimes, which are being watched all over the world as leadership of other countries explain that this is what America and democracy is really all about. How sad. The United States has been embarrassed, humiliated, and weakened for all to see. The disasters in Afghanistan, perhaps the most embarrassing moment in the history of our country, where we lost lives, left Americans behind, and surrendered $85 billion worth of the finest military equipment anywhere in the world. And Ukraine, which would have never happened if I were your president, are something and even the Democrats admit that. That's something I've seen them admit over and over again.
They've admitted it.
But
he said Trump.
Our enemies are speaking of us with scorn and laughter and derision because of those two events. But there are many more. Even just today, a missile was sent in, probably by Russia, to Poland, 50 miles into Poland. And people are going absolutely wild and crazy, and they're not happy. They are very, very angry. Now we have a president who falls asleep at global conferences, was held in contempt by the British Parliament over Afghanistan. Thanks to the words of wisdom,
I can't even believe the British Parliament held him in contempt. That's just so disgusting.
Summit on the environment of all things. They fly for days to get there.
I don't get how he was he's supposedly
country,
a warmonger.
A name
or a non-warmonger,
that was actually a country on another continent. And he's leading us to the brink of nuclear war, a concept unimaginable just 2 short years ago. You cannot mention the nuclear word. It's too devastating. The Green New Deal and the environment, which they say may affect us in 300 years, is all that is talked about. And yet nuclear weapons, which would destroy the world immediately, are never even discussed as a major threat. Can you imagine? They say the ocean will rise 1/8 of an inch over the next 200 to 300 years. But don't worry about nuclear weapons that can take out entire countries with one shot. Something is wrong with their thinking. Under Biden and the radical Democrats, America has been mocked, derided, and brought to its knees, perhaps like never before.
Perhaps.
But we are here tonight to declare that it does not have to be this way. Does not have to be this way.
Make America great again. It's happening, folks.
Two years ago, we were a great nation, and soon we will be a great nation again.
Oh, yeah. Here it comes. It's getting ready.
The decline of America is being forced upon us by Biden and the radical left lunatics running our government right into the ground. This decline is not a fate we must accept. When given the choice, boldly, clearly, and directly, I believe the American people will overwhelmingly reject the left's platform of national ruin, and they will embrace our platform of national greatness and glory to America. Glory. Exactly 1 week ago, our citizens voted in the important midterm elections. And despite a ridiculously long and unnecessary period of waiting, far longer, in fact, than any third world country, just a short time ago, the Republicans won back control of the House of Representatives. And it was with a great Trump-endorsed candidate, Congressman-elect Kevin Kiley, who is a fantastic person. And I'm very happy it was his vote that did it. But we now won back. This happened just an hour ago. Much criticism is being placed on the fact that the Republican Party should have done better. And frankly, much of this blame is correct. But the citizens of our country have not yet realized the full extent and gravity of the pain our nation is going through, and the total effect of the suffering is just starting to take hold. They don't quite feel it yet, but they will very soon. I have no doubt that by 2024, it will sadly be much worse, and they will see much more clearly what happened and what is happening to our country, and the voting will be much different.
Oh, here we go. We're talking about the voting now. This should be interesting. Why is the voting going to be different?
Are you getting ready?
That's what he said. No, but I think it's going to be a pretty interesting.
And I am too.
Well, he's going to. Here he comes.
I do want to point out that in the midterms, my endorsement success rate was 232 wins and only 22 losses. You don't hear that
from the media. Fact check on that. But yeah, probably just because he endorsed every Republican safe seat.
This is an elegant night and an elegant press place, and I'm not going to use the term fake news media. So we're going to keep it very elegant.
Keeping it elegant.
But you don't hear that from the media. But I think you will, because people are starting to see what happened. That's some score. And in the primaries, was 98.6%. But they were still trying
to blame me. Here's what he's really trying to do. This is probably going to piss some people off in the Republican Party. Him coming out and saying, making the case that, you know what? I don't care that like all my major candidates in the midterms just clearly fell flat on their face.
Securing the border.
Screw you. I'm going to say my endorsement has 98.6% success rate or something crazy like that. But yeah, it's really pretty crazy. Just some mid-speech impression so far.
No,
I'm having a little bit, because we all know it's going to end with an announcement. It's going to make America great again. Stuff like that. But what it comes down to, it he's just gonna, he's talking about some of the key stuff, the problems with the country. It does make sense. It just seems to be a pretty boring, pretty policy focused speech. He first brought up the 2020 election really just about halfway through it. I mean, it just seems really that the message hasn't really changed. Delivery seems like low key. He's not really hitting hard. Let's be real. He's saving the suffer for later. He wants to kind of put this is a speech that he's trying to do directly towards the country. I think at this point, someone's saying, I'm back. Biden's not been that good, and trying to really pretend like the impact of the midterm elections. This thing that hey, we think inflation isn't really out, really in within the control of Joe Biden, within the control of the government. We don't really think it's that bad. He just said, you do. Inflation's going to get bad. And believe me, by 2024, it's going to get a lot worse. It's like, it is an incredibly bleak and gory descriptions of America under Biden. Michael D. Shear, he pointed out pretty accurately, kind of harken back to his first inaugural speech where he just, the American carnage stops right here and stops right now. But yeah, it's still always going to be fun to get, you know, do some of the Trump impersonations, some of the mannerisms, you know, all that stuff is coming back in a big way. Here as he got into it, you know, it seems like, yeah, Maggie Haberman made a pretty apt speech, you know, is a pretty apt remark there, as he accurately, as we pulled away, starting to get bored with his speech and just kind of trailing off. And this is where things get interesting, though. But we do have to get into some of the other news here as he makes this announcement. Overall, I would say this speech, it's not going to mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things, but I think it does set a relatively good tone. It could have sounded a lot worse. It could have sounded, oh, we're in a big moment here. Big applause line. I think it could have sounded a lot worse. It could have sounded a lot more like he was at the end of January 6th.
I told them, I said, if you just keep a little bit lower standard, you're going to have a big victory. They said, let's win by 40 seats. Let's win by 50. I said, if you win by 2 seats, be happy. But she's on her way to another country right now. She's been fired.
Right, we just broke in there to, you know, a little bit of a non sequitur. But I think, yeah, he started off strong with the first 15 minutes. He's starting to ramble, I think, you know, in a bit of a big way.
The American dream.
No, he's still going and going.
It's a word you don't use. 2 words. I don't want to be Joe. It's 2 words. American dream. That was not good what he did. There are a lot of bad things, like going to Idaho and saying, welcome to the state of Florida. I really love it.
Yeah, just literally things he would do as well. Just like, no, yeah, it just make these kind of same, like, verbal mistakes. Didn't he say something about Namibia when he was in, like, just said. Just bunch of just irrelevant bullshit that, like, really is only going to activate the partisan sides, because people, oh, we must have just announced it right there, but people know that their politicians are by and large all just, like, idiots or freaks. So I think that's an assumption that people have worked in, and really the fundamental thing is they can't change anything. Like, I think really people are starting to realize that politics right now is just all about who can make my enemies, the people I don't like, feel the worst.
So
and I still think Trump is going to, you know, prove to be the best at that.
Some people say, how do you speak before so many people all the time? If when there's love in the room, it's really easy. If you want to know the truth, it really is. You ought to try it sometime.
Yeah, but anyway, he goes, he's sounding, you know, relatively normal in, you know, a broad comparison. He's hitting some of the things that, you know, he was relatively more popular for. But yeah, you know, definitely some kind of, you know, incoherency, but, you know, it's Trump at the end of the day. It's who he is, and he's spinning his record on the midterm elections. Interestingly, something that's probably going to piss a lot of people off in the Republican, you know, Club for Growth world, Republican economy. So, the Trump-backed candidates for positions in rhetoric, he said, frightened in, Mitch McConnell said, frightened independent and moderate voters. You know, that's something that I think clearly is just backed up way more by the evidence. You know, just saying this, like, everyone who I endorse won, you know, acting like that, you know, it may piss off the Republican, you know, media class and the general media class, but that is a big, big, big time, a different story, you know, this speech. From the base. And if Trump can make these Club for Growth people, these Ron DeSantis people, these Republican suits, the demons, the people on the outside, like he did, like the enemies of his campaign in the way he did in 2016, where just all these people, like, where one of the more remarkable moments, I thought, was when he turned to the camera at a South Carolina Republican primary debate and was like, all those people are fake Republican donors who don't like me, and they're out there booing. And he still won the primary on top of that. If he can tap into that sentiment, I think he's got a very good chance, but I don't know. In all the Trump speeches I've watched over the years, there's always a moment where teleprompter Trump gives way to unleashed Trump. Will he go off script tonight? Says Michael DeShere. I think he probably pretty much has by this point. He's just, you know, there's love in the room. Having a great time. You know, he's feeling like, he's definitely feeling the glow. He's definitely feeling the attention. But yeah. That seems to, you know, we'll put a pin in that one for now. Trump officially back, expected to announce, has announced, and, you know, it'll wait to see, you know, what he can do with his campaign. But I don't think so much of that resistance that he's, you know, supposedly about to face in the Republican Party is going to cause him too much trouble. All right, let's go on to another very important story. A blast in Poland has just gone off. And Warsaw has indicated a Russian-made missile is to blame. Poland held an emergency meeting of the country's National Security and Defense Council, and President Andrzej Duda said it was highly likely he would call for the invoking of Article 4 under NATO's charter, which members confer with the nation's territorial integrity or security has been threatened. So that's not quite Article 5. It's like, we got to go to war. Article 4 is we got to have a meeting about it. While the Polish foreign minister said that the Russian the missile was Russian-made, Duda told reporters it was most likely a Russian-made missile, but that's still under investigation at the moment. We don't have any conclusive evidence as to who it was that launched this missile. It's a big new row. Poland's foreign minister summoned Russia's ambassador to demand immediate detailed explanations for the blast, according to a statement from the ministry. Very understandable, to say the least. It's a big new row. Did that, but the Kremlin has denied any involvement in the explosion. There's no immediate evidence of an intentional strike. A deliberate attack would have broader and much more serious consequences because Poland is a NATO member, unlike Ukraine, and that alliance charter is, you know, all for one, one for all. And if that goes, if Poland is attacked as well in a serious way, which I don't think Putin, you know, there's no indication Putin has, you know, had any desires to do that. You know, it's not like he's particularly having a lot of success at the moment in Ukraine. Our last episode was just about how they're just about to give up a major piece of territory they were confident in holding just a few months ago. So, it's safe to say they're not doing well at all right now. So, a war in Poland, opening up a new front in Poland does not seem like the move, to say the least, and not something that they would do, especially given that it's a NATO country and how badly they fared against a non-NATO country they thought they were going to easily walk over in Ukraine. So, I think, you know, I think probably the best we could hope for, and maybe, you know, praying and hoping here, this may be, you know, wildly optimistic, but I think it is safe to say, to say the least, that, you know, we can definitely hope and pray that it was a, you know, some sort of accident, some sort of misfired missile that just went too far or something. But if it's, you know, it went over the entire state of Belarus, you know, it's not ideal at all. it's a very unappealing situation, to say the least. You know, how this happened, it didn't seem to be any kind of, like, real kind of coordinated attack, but if it was some sort of accidental firing, that's a, you know, in and of itself an incredibly scary situation. But let's just hope that all it is. You know, no corroborating official seems to be, you know, at this point. But, you know, information seems to be backing up that this was some sort of intentional attack has been out at this point. So, you know, we can still have this hope that it was an accident, which is good. Analysts noted that the militaries of both Russia and Ukraine used Soviet-era Russian-made missiles, meaning the statement did not place definitive blame on Moscow. So it's interesting. So it's Soviet-era Russian-made missiles both Russia and Ukraine used. So was this some sort of misfiring in another way? We don't quite know. You know, I think that's, you know, very important, very interesting to consider before any action is taken. You know, I think that is very, very clear that what we will see is just, you know, what I think, you know, we will see a, you know, hopefully a lot of back channeling, a lot of regulation, a lot of kind of calming down before any of this gets to be too serious in any real way. Because I think, you know, hopefully, you know, just please, we got to hope, of course, you know, rationality would prevail here. I think that's going to be a really, really important thing to say at the very, very least. And, you know, this is pretty much the most that we need to know. So President Biden, here's what he had to say about it. He's at the G7 right now in Bali to discuss the situation in Poland. A White House video feed showed 30 seconds of Biden sitting silently between British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada. Asked by reporters on whether he'd offer an update on the explosion, Biden replied no. So earlier, Biden spoke with Duda and then Jens Stoltenberg, NATO's Secretary General. The explosion occurred about 4 miles north of the Ukrainian border in just in Polish territory there. So if you want a little bit, a remedial geography lesson there, so you kind of got Russia to the east, and then just to north of that is Belarus, and Belarus is kind of on top of Ukraine. Russia to the east, then kind of central, you got Ukraine and Belarus kind of right on top of each other, and then past Ukraine and Belarus moving to the west, then you got Poland. And this bomb apparently went off right, seems to be around the border of right around the intersection of Belarus, Poland, and Kyiv. And Ukraine. So that is a encouraging thing. Or I don't it's not really an encouraging thing, but just an informative thing, I guess, what I would say. I don't know why that would be encouraging there. Excuse me. A Polish government spokesperson, Piotr Muller, said these special procedures have been put in place, including increased combat readiness of certain military units. Russia launched a widespread attack on Ukraine on Tuesday with roughly 90 missiles, primarily at the country's electrical infrastructure. Ukraine's Volyn region, where the Russian rocket strikes were reported on Tuesday, lies across from Prezvodo. So I think that's interesting. So we got the Volyn region, where Russian rocket strikes were reported on Tuesday, across the border from Prezvodo, where the explosion went off. So it seems very possible that one just maybe misfired. The explosion proximity raised the possibility it was an errant missile that had been shot down by one of Ukraine's air defense systems. The Ukrainian Air Force said 70 incoming missiles have been shot down on Tuesday. A fragment of one missile struck a residential building in Kiev, killing one person. But Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmitry Kuybla said that the explosion in Poland was not caused by a Ukrainian air defense missile. So this is something that, you know, everyone seems to be, I think, in the current stage, very much kind of back-channeling to each other, very much, you know, figuring out what's going on, which I think is definitely the right way to go in terms of safety for diplomacy and respect for diplomacy, but a very, very scary situation that we can only hope all, you know, calms down. There are times where we've been worried about World War III in the past. It's never been quite, you know, up to, you know, it's never been really quite up to snuff, but I think it is a, you know, a very, very important, you know, situation that we got, you know, take it very seriously every time something like this would happen. All right, let's go on now. Just do a quick circle back to all things Trump. CNN and MSNBC are now no longer taking the speech live. A speech, you know, very heavy on the same anti-establishment themes Trump used the first time around. Feels like it still has resonance for people who distrust those in power. I think Scheer is right about that. You know, it's going to hit with some people. You know, that, because got news for you, a lot of people still do distrust people in power, whether it's Biden, whether it's, you know, anybody. And if he can convincingly point himself as that, you know, anti-establishment message, when all the establishment turns on him, it's going to look pretty easy again. But yeah, the riff, is, about taking back the quarters of power, landing a little bit differently after the Capitol Hill riots, is Maggie Haberman as well. I'm looking at the New York Times kind of comment feed on this. This is descending into more typical Trump fare. He just mentioned the China virus, which is a racist term for COVID-19. A constellation of liberal organizations are releasing statements in response to the speech, though, which is often vowing to confront Trump and Trumpism. So, you know, they're going back. We're bringing the band back together. But it does seem to be a very, you know, very, very divisive moment. Very interesting, though. I think the first thing he'll have to do is beat down those Club for Growth people, the people who want to kind of push Ron DeSantis on us, in a, you know, kind of in a very interesting way that, you know, will really involve, I think, for the first time, Republicans having to subdue their base and bend them to their will, which I don't know if it's going to work, but, you know, it's always interesting to see them give it a shot. All right. Those are two kind of main stories for today. We will be back on Thursday. Thank you so much for listening. It's been Newsflash.